The Lesson of the Master by Henry James. Chapter 1. He had been told the ladies were at church, but this was corrected by what he saw from the top of the steps. They descended from a great height in two arms, with a circular sweep of the most charming effect, at the threshold of the door, which, from the long bright gallery, overlooked the immense lawn. Three gentlemen on the grass at a distance sat under the great trees, while the fourth figure showed a crimson dress that told as a bit of colour amid the fresh, rich green. The servant had so far accompanied Paul Overt as to introduce him to this view, after asking him if he wished first to go to his room. The young man declined that privilege, conscious of no disrepair from so short and easy a journey, and always liking to take at once a general perceptive possession of a new scene. He stood there, a little with his eyes on the group and on the admirable picture, the wide grounds of an old country house near London, that only made it better, on a splendid Sunday in June. "But that lady, who's she?" he said to the servant, before the man left him. "I think she's Mrs. St. George, sir." "Mrs. St. George, the wife of the distinguished?" Then Paul Overt checked himself, doubting if a footman would know. "Yes, sir, probably, sir," said his guide, who appeared to wish to intimate that a person staying at Summersoft would naturally be, if only by alliance, distinguished. His tone, however, made poor Overt himself feel for the moment scantly so. "And the gentleman?" Overt went on. "Well, sir, one of them's General Fancourt." "Ah, yes, I know, thank you. General Fancourt was distinguished, there was no doubt of that, for something he had done, or perhaps even hadn't done, the young man couldn't remember which, some years before, in India." The servant went away, leaving the glass doors open into the gallery, and Paul Overt remained at the head of the wide double staircase, saying to himself that the place was sweet and promised a pleasant visit, while he leaned on the balustrade of fine old ironwork, which, like all the other details, was of the same period as the house. It all went together and spoke in one voice, a rich English voice, of the early part of the 18th century. It might have been church time on a summer's day in the reign of Queen Anne. The stillness was too perfect to be modern, the nearness counted so as distance, and there was something so fresh and sound in the originality of the large smooth house, the expanse of beautiful brickwork that showed for pink rather than red, and that had been kept clear of messy creepers by the law under which a woman with a rare complexion disdains a veil. When Paul Overt became aware that the people under the trees had noticed him, he turned back through the open doors into the great gallery which was the pride of the place. It marched across from end to end, and seemed, with its bright colours, its high-panelled windows, its faded flower chintzes, its quickly recognised portraits and pictures, the blue-and-white china of its cabinets, and the attenuated festoons and rosettes of its ceiling, a cheerful, upholstered avenue into the other century. Our friend was slightly nervous. That went with his character as a student of fine prose, went with the artist's general disposition to vibrate, and there was a particular thrill in the idea that Henry St. George might be a member of the party. For the young aspirant, he had remained a high literary figure, in spite of the lower range of production to which he had fallen after his first three great successes, the comparative absence of quality in his later work. There had been moments when Paul Overt almost shed tears for this, but now that he was near him, he had never met him, he was conscious only of the fine original source and of his own immense debt. After he had taken a turn or two up and down the gallery, he came out again and descended the steps. He was but slenderly supplied with a certain social boldness, it was really a weakness in him, so that, conscious of a want of acquaintance with the four persons in the distance, he gave way to motions recommended by their not committing him to a positive approach. There was a fine English awkwardness in this. He felt that, too, as he sauntered vaguely and obliquely across the lawn, taking an independent line. Fortunately, there was an equally fine English directness in the way one of the gentlemen presently rose and made as if to stalk him, though with an air of conciliation and reassurance. To this demonstration Paul Overt instantly responded, even if the gentleman were not his host. He was tall, straight, and elderly.